Welcome to Babbittville Radio, a place where you'll hear great conversations with the world's best and most inspirational runners, triathletes, and cyclists. Endurance lives here. Now, here's your host, USA Triathlon and Ironman Triathlon Hall of Famer, Bob Babbitt.
Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt. We are brought to you by the Tough Man Triathlon series. That's toughmantri.com. By VeloFix, the world's coolest mobile bike shop. ATVSwimSpas.com, the official training vessel of six-time Ironman world champion Dave Scott. Our Challenged Athletes Foundation. Last year we sent out 2,448 grants totaling $3.7 million to keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. Check out any of our interviews on Babbittville.com or on iTunes. And as always, endurance lives here. Our next guest has climbed Mount Kilimanjaro, has climbed Mount Whitney, and next week she'll be climbing the Empire State Building, running up the Empire State Building run up. Her name is Tara Butcher. Tara, how you doing?
Hi, Bob. I'm great. I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I am spectacular. So this will be a little different than climbing Kilimanjaro.
Yeah, I think a little bit different.
You know what's cool? This is like the 8-year anniversary. It was like January 31st, 2010 that you summited.
It is. Yeah, actually it is. I didn't even think about that.
Very cool. So take me back. And 2005 is when you had the car accident?
Yes. May 19th, 2005.
And so you, I mean, originally it was just a fender bender, correct?
Yeah. Yep. So just a little minor accident on the freeway. Not quite sure how that was caused. I don't remember anything that day.
Yeah.
So me and the other driver pulled off to the shoulder of the freeway, and I made a few phone calls and wasn't getting through to anybody. So I got out of my car to go speak to the other driver. And once I was out of my car, I was struck by a passing car that was going 70 miles an hour.
Oh, my God. And was he driving on the shoulder or she driving on the shoulder?
He saw that something was going on, so he was distracted, kind of looking, trying to see what was going on, and he kind of swerved a little bit. But, no, it was just an accident. You know, he didn't mean to do it.
So, at that point, you're 23 years old, and yeah. Now you're, you know, talk a little bit. You were in a coma for a while, and the damage was what? From getting hit by a car head-on at 72 miles an hour, the fact that you're alive is pretty amazing.
It is, actually. It's very miraculous that I'm alive, according to my doctors. So my head was severed from my spine. It's called an internal decapitation. C1 through C3 was severed. So they went in and did a titanium rod and a bone fusion in my neck. And both of my legs were crushed. The left one was completely mangled, absolutely no way of saving it. And the right one was pretty much like halfway mangled, and they were able to save it and put a titanium rod in as my shin bone. And I have a lot of nerve damage and scar tissue on that side, but I have that side. And then I had some internal bleeding, a ruptured ovary, and that's about it. So from head to toe, I was literally broken.
So 99% of people who have injuries like that don't make it, I'm guessing.
99% of people with an internal decapitation are either paralyzed or dead, yes.
Wow. And so you're in an induced coma for 10 days. When you come mm-hmm. out of it, you're missing a leg, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and your spine and neck are fused together. What did you remember anything from the accident?
I don't remember anything.
Which is probably a good thing.
The whole day. Yeah, that's what I'm told.
Yeah, that way you don't have the nightmares about that.
Yeah, and I don't. Yeah.
How back was that? Were you an athlete before this?
Not at all.
Not at all. What were you?
Yeah. I was like into starting my career, and I was really into that as a hairstylist. And I was really social with my friends, and I loved my family and my dog, and playing piano and going to theater and movies, and like that was kind of it. I didn't know that I was an athlete. I didn't know I had it in me.
So you're 8 weeks of hospitalization, and your mom was there the entire time, and she stayed with you. She was amazing.
She was amazing. She flew down right when she got the news, and she didn't leave until I went back to work about 4 months later.
Wow. One of the things I remember talking to one of our wheelchair athletes, Glenn Hartrick, and mm-hmm. he told me that after his accident, he realized fairly quickly that he was sort of the barometer for all of his friends and family. If he was in a good mood, they could sort of move on with their lives. But if he if he was down, and that was evident that he was down, then everybody, they were sort of paralyzed. They really couldn't move on with their lives. Did you find that as well?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and, you know, if I was sad, my mom was sad. And when I was having a good day and going forward with my recovery and my therapy, she was right there with me, you know? Yeah, so she was, I was definitely a barometer of how she was doing and how my family was doing, yes.
So you had to relearn how to walk, and I'm sure that the pain from, I mean, basically your entire body was smashed. How long was it before you felt, you know, normal again, or you felt that, okay, I can move forward?
Well, I mean, from the very beginning, I was determined to move forward, and I knew that I would. I just didn't know how, and I wasn't sure how to get there, and there were a lot of struggles along the way, and it was very much an uphill battle. But to be honest with you, before I was completely comfortable in my skin and able to have a normal day and do normal things, it was a couple of years. I would say at least 4 years.
Yeah, again, you're a young woman, and you're in the midst of your career, and now you're missing a leg. And it's funny, when I when I saw you at the Christmas party over at CAF, when you're wearing long pants, and I was pointing out to a friend of ours who was injured in a bike accident and broke his back. I said, this woman had an internal decapitation. She's missing a, one leg, and she's got a metal rod in the other. He's like, no way. You can, was it important to you early on to sort of cover up the leg and make sure that the people didn't really know what was going on?
Yeah, it was. It was really important to me. I just wanted to go back to my life the way it was. You know, I wanted to go back to my career and just living the life that I was living and loving. And it wasn't necessarily that I was embarrassed or ashamed of my leg, but I didn't want to be defined as that, you know. And now I'm a lot more comfortable with everything, and I'm totally fine wearing shorts. And I like the option of talking about it when I want to and making it visible when I want to, and then also not when I don't want to, because it's not totally who I am. It's just part of who I am.
I remember years ago, people who had amputations would cover them up. They had friends who didn't even know they were an amputee. And then I was interviewing a young woman in Philly a couple years ago, and she's, you know, wearing shorts, and she's missing her leg, and she was like, this is what makes me different. This is what makes me special, you know, in a good way, rather than back in my era, it was sort of a negative connotation. Have you found that you, it doesn't seem to cause, people are able to understand it more now than maybe when this first happened?
Oh, yeah, very much. There's so much more awareness around it from, you know, the variety of all of our wounded warriors and the Boston Marathon bombing, and it's just a lot more normalized now than it was back then, for sure. And she's right. It does make us special, and it is something special. It's a gift. You know, it's a gift that we get to share and inspire other people through that.
So do you look at it that way, that this is a gift, that this... You
know, absolutely.
Really? So if somebody said, hey, you know what, Tara, this is, we're going to get into the time travel machine, and you're not going to have this accident.
Yeah, you know, that's a tricky one, because I'm not going to lie, I have moments where, you know, I'll envy certain girlfriends of mine with their perfect, beautiful, long legs, and I have a moment of awe, you know, like, that's so wonderful, and that would be so nice, but it goes away in 2 seconds, because through this accident, I was given the knowledge of living my life through gratitude, and I didn't do that before. You know, I'd say I took things for granted more so, and now I'm just so much more grateful, and that's just a better mindset. You know, I'm happier.
So you remember your first day you went for a run?
I remember the first day I went for a run, yep, in my driveway.
Really? And that was, now was this right after you got your leg from CAF and OSER?
Yep, it was my first grant from CAF, and I got my running leg, and I was just in this curious state of my therapy and wanting to try everything I could. So I wanted to try running, and I ran. My goal was to run to the end of the driveway and back, and I did it, and I felt free. My body hadn't moved like that before, and I felt I wanted more. So I just kept doing it, and then eventually I got on the treadmill, and I started. I remember when I ran my first mile on the treadmill.
Yeah.
And then, it was like exhilarating.
So you do some 5Ks, 10Ks, half marathon, 2008 New York City Marathon. What was that mm-hmm. feeling like in really just a couple of years? You'd gone from somebody whose body was shattered to running mm-hmm. a marathon.
Right? It's crazy. You know, part of me was really in a state of proving myself. I needed to prove to myself and to everyone else that I could still do everything, and I wanted to show how capable I still was. And I had people doubting me all the time. You know, my parents were like, you can't run the marathon. That's, your legs are going to get more injured. That's not going to be good for your body. You can't do that. And so I say, watch me. I'm going to do it. And I did it. And that's just kind of how my mindset was.
And then you do a couple of triathlons. You mm-hmm. did Super Seal in March of 2009, right? And then you're cycling, you're swimming, you're doing triathlons. And your friends who knew you knew the younger Tara, the earlier mm-hmm. Tara, who was not an athlete at all. Were they freaked out that all of a sudden you were becoming this endurance machine?
Yeah, and I mean, I have to say that a lot of my friends pre-accident aren't my friends anymore. And my close, dear, dear friends now are all people that I met afterwards.
That's pretty fascinating. So basically, they weren't into sport. You are. And
no, exactly.
Yeah, so it's really hard to, life's too short, right? You got to have people who share the same goals.
Yeah, definitely. It's a different lifestyle, you know, and if that was the path that I was going on, and that's where I continued to go.
So as a amputee, and you were connected with Challenged Athletes Foundation, how did that happen? How did you meet CAF?
So once I was home from the hospital, I didn't have my prosthetic yet. I was still in a wheelchair. I still had a halo neck brace on. My prosthetist at the time sent over JP. He's one of the CAF.
JP Thavers, yes. He's a top triathlete and runner. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and he was so persistent with me, and he kept calling my mom, and he wanted to come visit me, and I just didn't want to. I was like, I don't want to talk to anybody. No one can relate to me. You know, I was feeling really sorry for myself. And finally, my mom just kind of snuck and got him to come over to my house without me really knowing, and he came, and he walks in, and he's wearing shorts with his prosthetic very visible, and he's this, like, handsome, very athletic man, and he's carrying his running leg, and he's like, hey, let's talk about it. I've been where you're at. Tell me about it. Like, I'm here for you. Let's get through this. And he completely changed my life that day. I'm like, wait, you run? You do this? You do that? You're fast? Like, that's amazing. I mean, I was blown away, but he planted a seed in my mind of what was possible.
What I love about that is, you know, the street cred that comes with a Tara Butcher going and visiting an amputee in the hospital. Or mm-hmm. a Sarah Reinertsen, or a Scott Bassett, or J.P. Thaberge. That's that aha moment. It was an aha moment for you, realizing, okay, this is a young guy who's had, you know, gone through the same crap I've gone through, and he's come out the other side. Why can't I?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And he told me about the event down at the Cove that CAF has. And he's like, you know, just come check it out. Just come take a look. Bring your family. Bring your friends. Just come and scope it out. And I was like, what is this all about? So I went down there. And again, my life changed again. I went and saw what everyone was doing and all these great athletes and all these abilities that people think are disabilities. And again, my life was changed. I'm like, I want to be a part of that community. Like, that was my new path, for sure.
That's actually, I think that event is probably the most cathartic event there is for so many different people. One, for, you know, the prosthetists, they learn from each other. They see what the different guys or gals are building for the athletes. Two, the parents. For a lot, I've had a mom tell me that, you know, for 364 days a year, her kid feels like a freak because he's in a small town in Iowa and he's the only amputee in the city. He comes out here and there's legs all over the lawn. There's 120 amputees out there.
Exactly. It's such a special day for those reasons. And everyone that even knows about the event or has been and seen it, I mean, it's so inspiring.
So have you had that, been able to do that give back where, okay, what JP did for me, I've been able to do for somebody else?
Yeah, definitely. For a few people, for sure. Mm-hmm.
And is
yeah,
that
and it's
pretty fun.
So special. Oh my gosh, it's so special because I'm on the other side of that now. And to be able to help someone and really make a difference in someone's life is what life is all about. And it's so fulfilling.
So you get invited to do Mount Kilimanjaro. Now, it's one thing to do the San Diego International Triathlon, to run New York City Marathon. When somebody starts talking about 8 days of climbing Mount Kilimanjaro, that's a little different gig. What were your thoughts when you were approached to do that?
I don't know. I thought Africa sounded cool. I didn't know really much about the mountain. I was in, again, my state of proving myself, and I was saying yes to everything, any sort of challenge I wanted to try. So when it presented itself, I said, yes, why not? You know, it sounds great. And at the time, I was doing a lot of endurance training for all the racing I was doing, so my training had to be kind of tweaked and shifted a little bit. And I just put my eye on the prize, and that was getting up to the summit, and I was determined.
So again, like we said, that was January 31st, 2010, nearly just about 8 years from this interview. You went up there, you had Erica Davis, who's wheelchair-bound, and the documentary is called Through the Roof. What was the toughest part about that, about climbing Kilimanjaro? Because you were, you know, I think you had done some, what, six-hour hikes leading in?
Yeah, maybe a couple. I was definitely hiking a lot, but I had only a three-month notice before going to Kilimanjaro, so I didn't have a ton of time to train, but enough to get my body strong and ready. The hardest part was, you know, you're not really sleeping very well because you're in a tent and it's just not comfortable, and it's hot and then it's cold and
altitude.
I mean, there's every single season you could think of on the mountains. So you're going through all these different changes. You know, the sleep deprivation and the not showering and just kind of grinding every day was the hardest part. For sure.
And the feeling when you summited?
I mean, I literally got the body chills when you said that because I've never felt such euphoria. I just was so happy to be up there. I was so proud of myself and I was so excited.
Well, if you think about it from 5 years earlier when who knew your life could have been over to 5 years later, you are literally close to the top of the world.
Exactly, and it was just so breathtakingly beautiful up there, and it was like kind of just a reminder to me of how alive I am and how grateful.
So you're doing yoga, right? You're teaching yoga, correct?
No, I don't teach yoga. Someday I will, but right now I'm loving taking it, yeah.
You take yoga. You're doing a few stairs. Now, you got Empire State Run-Up coming up February 7th in New York City. What type of training you've been doing for this thing?
So I'm keeping my cardio going. I do a couple of spin classes a week. I do a couple of hot yoga classes and a couple of runs. That's like my normal workout base. And now I've just added running stairs in. Like I'll just go down to the cove, or I've done hill repeats over by my house, and I just run up and down the stairs.
I mean, a nice thing about this is you've done Kilimanjaro is, you know, what's 8 days. It's 86 flights of stairs, 1576 stairs. But the winning time for the guys is like 9:33. For the women is 11:23. So you know you're not going to need a light stick. You're not going to be out there all day long.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
You can suffer for 30 minutes.
That's exactly what I said. And say it takes me 20 to 40 minutes. You can do anything for that long,
exactly.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. You know that before you know it, if this thing starts, whatever time it starts, within an hour, you will be in a bar somewhere with friends.
Exactly.
With a drink with an umbrella, right? And you'll have a drink with an umbrella and you'll be fine.
Definitely. And that's exactly where my mindset will be. I'll be like, in an hour, this will be nothing and I'll be done with it with a drink in hand for sure.
I love that. So you're doing it seems like you have all these cool things in your life. What is there out there that you haven't done yet that you want to do?
Oh, man. You know, honestly, like on just a very personal level,
yeah.
The one big dream I haven't gotten to yet is having a child and getting married.
There you go.
Yeah, so family is very important to me, and I want to have my own someday.
That's cool. Speaking of family, your brother, March 5th, 2012, he's working on a roof doing solar panels, and a friend slides, he sees him sliding off the roof, and he puts himself in harm's way, and he ends up breaking multiple bones and crushes his joints and both legs, and has his right leg amputated like 7 years after yours. I mean, I read that, I'm thinking, your poor parents. Oh, my God.
I know, right? Can you even imagine as a mom and as a dad? I know.
Getting that call, and you're the, how did they handle it? How did you handle it?
Well, it was a little hard for me because I'm in San Diego and they're all in Utah. And when it happened and he was in the hospital, like, I just wanted to be there with him, you know,
right.
and just let him know it's going to be okay. And it was very hard for me to be away. So I was going back and forth a lot. And, you know, my parents were just in the hospital as much as possible. So what happened is one of his injuries, one of the open wounds from his injury ended up getting an infection in the hospital.
Yeah.
And so he later chose to amputate it because they said you will either have a drag foot that you can't really do much on, you can't be athletic and run and do sports, or you can amputate it and wear a prosthetic. And he had me as an example, you know, you can still live a great normal life. So
right.
he chose to amputate it. And yeah, I mean, it's kind of crazy. Now our phone calls are, I just talked to him a few minutes ago and it's like, how's your leg doing? Is it bugging you? Like, those are our conversations now. Like, what's the latest what's the latest foot that you got? And how's your ankle? And, you know, those are our conversations
right.
now.
Right, right, right. What type of lining are you using?
Yeah.
All that type of stuff. What's your socket like? Do you have, when your leg swells, what are the biggest issues with that? With, you know, your leg can change volume and get bigger, smaller.
Yeah.
You have to, I mean, amputees have to really watch their weight. They don't want to lose too much weight or gain too much weight, right? Because your leg doesn't fit.
Exactly. Your limb is very affected by water gain or weight gain, and that affects the fit of your prosthetic. And when you don't have a good fit on your prosthetic, I don't know, I'm not happy on those days. I'm very uncomfortable. There's a lot of rubbing that can cause sores that can get infected that are like just so painful to the touch, and then wearing your leg is painful, and you know, those days are not fun. So it's definitely, you have to be very in tune with your body and your weight and keep it healthy and stable.
Now, Brandon is doing Empire State Run Up with you?
Yeah, he is. My brother is, yep.
Is this his, one of his first athletic events, or has he been doing this for a while?
It's his, one of his very first as an amputee, and it's his first CAF event altogether.
Wow. And that, so it's been a few years. Was it hard for him to, it must have been a while before the infection got to the point where they had to amputate.
It was a few months after his accident.
Yeah.
It was within the same year. Yeah.
So it was, was he an athlete beforehand?
He was athletic in a sense of like he did bodybuilding and water skiing.
Right.
And, you know, that type of thing. But he wasn't necessarily like a runner or endurance athlete, no.
When did he reach out or when did you guys chat and say, you know what, why don't you try some of this stuff?
He came to the Cove, to the CAF event a couple years ago, probably like 3 years ago.
Yep.
So I've been kind of like working on him, trying to get him involved. And I think you just get to a point where you're ready, you know, and you're ready to try new things and challenge yourself. And I think he's there now.
That is so cool. And are you guys going to be staying together during this thing, or is it one of those every person for themselves?
You know, I just asked him that, actually, when I talked to him today, and he said, well, are we competing against each other, or what are we doing? Are we supporting each other? And he's like, we're competing. And I'm like, okay.
Oh, he said that.
Yeah, he did.
He's basically saying, Tara, you're my sister, but I'm taking you down.
Yeah, probably. That's
right.
What he thinks, but we'll see.
Yeah, I bet he hasn't been doing the stair stuff you've been doing. I don't think he's climbed Kilimanjaro or anything else, so yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No,
so,
he hasn't.
And then last year you did Whitney. How was that compared to Kilimanjaro?
Yeah. Gosh, I mean, Whitney was, it's still fresh for me because only in October, but it was really, really hard. It was very challenging. The weather conditions were terrible. It was windy and cold, and we had such a time crunch. Like, we started at 2:30 a.m., and we wanted to be done and at dinner at 7 p.m. before it was too dark. So we did it, and it was just exhausting. You know, it was very hard.
That was up and back.
Yeah, we went up and down in one day, where some people do it in 2 days, where they camp halfway and
right.
Acclimate a little bit.
So when you've got those weather issues, is that a problem mm-hmm. with your leg when it gets cold like that, or with the prosthetic? How does that work?
It's definitely affected, yeah. And when you are cold and you shrink inside, you just have to add more socks into your prosthetic so it fits. You know, it's like your shoe being
right.
too big, and you add a sock to make it fit better. It's just like that. So you just you're dealing with things more than you want to. You know, there's more stopping and like changing your socks and adding more, taking them away versus like just going. You know, you're just a little more stopped.
So what has CAF meant in your life?
Oh gosh, it makes me want to cry when I talk about it. They have a huge, huge, huge place in my heart, and they always will. They've completely changed my life, not only through introducing me to my athletic side, but the community that they provide for me and the people and the support. I mean, it's just incredible. I always think, I don't know what I would do without them.
You're the best. Tara, have fun next week. The best part is you got, 30 minutes climbing, and then you got New York, you got shopping,
yeah.
you got plays, you got going
yeah.
to dinner. What could
right?
be better than that? It's like, basically, I can suffer for a half hour and then go live New York.
Totally, and I'm told that we get to ring the New York Stock Exchange bell early Monday morning. So
wow! And
I mean,
now
how cool is that? Have
you been there?
No, I've been to New York. Yeah,
right.
I've been to New York, but I haven't been to
Empire State Building.
Any of the places we're going? No, I haven't.
Very cool. Hey, Tara, thanks so much for taking time. It's fun. We did this a few years ago, and it's always nice to refresh and catch up with you again.
Yeah, it was very lovely chatting with you, always. Thank you so much, Bob.
Tara Butcher has been our guest. She is running the Empire State Building run-up next week, February 7th, and as part of Team CAF, CAF official charity for the event. Again, we are brought to you by ToughManTry.com, VeloFix, ATV Swim Spas, the Challenge Athletes Foundation. We sent out 2,448 grants last year, totaling $3.7 million. Check us out on Babbittville or on iTunes. And until next time, remember, endurance lives here.